campaign attorney that I reported to, Alex Cannon. He brought it to Mark Meadows, who, in response to the finding, hey, we looked and just didn't find any fraud to change the results. His answer was, well, that means there's no there there, referring to the claims of voter fraud being relatively empty. So I get your zeal, Mike, for solving a problem. The problem is you have to make sure the problem exists before you go to what I think. Yeah. Wait, hold on.
Hold on. We're giving Ken the last word here. We're giving Ken the last word.
You have to, before you go to extremes, like we're going to roll back computers and go back to the Stone Age in terms of counting votes. You better have solid evidence that there's a problem of the, then you haven't shown me that evidence. It has to be verifiable, quantifiable. And I haven't seen it, and I'm happy if you want to deliver me a whole bunch of stuff, I'll go through it. But to go there without having the evidence, I believe, is dangerous, and it's leading us on a conversation that moves us away from addressing the things that we really should be fixing.
Why, gentlemen, listen, that? Mike, I'm so sorry.
All you have to do is go to frankspeech.com.
The evidence you claim is there. I gotcha.
It's all sitting there.
I gotcha. I gotcha, Mike.
Record. This is about a lady that got zero votes in her own precinct,
yeah.
You guys.
All right, we're going to look at it.
This is the, you know,
at some point, the conversation must come to an end. Ken, real quick, you don't want to melt down the machines to turn them into prison bars the way Mike wants to do, right?
I think that we would find that it would be incredibly difficult to do our elections by hand. It would take far longer than we think. And who is to say that those people who are counting late at night aren't going to make their own errors? So,
not to mention, we have better ways at this point of making prison bars than melting machines down, I would say.
Exactly.
Listen, gentlemen, Ken Block, Mike Pillow Lindell, you've really said it all. I hope that the audience gained some insights here, and I really do appreciate you joining me.
Promo code David Pacman.
I haven't tried, nor am I in a position to endorse any of Mike's products at this point.
I would certainly send you some. You gotta give me your address, David. You got the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mike, it's really nice meeting you, and David, thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, folks. This is Kevin. I know for the past couple of weeks I've been meaning to get to this brief tribute to my good friend Delroy Williams, who passed away a few weeks ago. An unfortunate accident. My brother left us, and his music lives on. We're going to take a brief look at some of these songs in his career. And look at the discography, which is pretty immense if you consider that he was relatively not a very well-known reggae artist, but very upful, very good-spirited brother, one of the most upful people I've ever met in my life. And we're going to take a brief period and pay tribute to Delly. Hope you enjoy it.
Down in the valley of the Eden, where you're born, down in the valley. Well, 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 well. running down in your spine, telling you everything is fine. Yes, everything is fine. Rocker's music, you know it feels so fine. What it is, rocker's music, yes, it got you on your feet. It's running down in your spine, telling you everything is fine. Sister in feel nice, talking about the rocker's music. It's running down. Yes, everything is all right. So we all go rock till daylight comes. Whoa. So we all go rock, we all go rock till daylight comes. Man, you mush me on my toes. We no need no but no fight. No, we don't want no crime. Rocker's time, I can feel nice, talking about the rocker's news. It's running down in your spine, telling you everything is fine. Yes, everything is fine. Rocker's music, you know it feels so fine. Rocker's music. Yes, it got you on your feet. It's running down in your spine, telling you everything is fine. Yes, everything is fine. Sister in feel nice, she's talking about the rocker's music. Wait. Running down in your spine, telling you everything is fine. Yes, everything is fine. Rocker's music, you know it feels so fine. What it is, rocker's music, yes, it got you on your feet. It's running down in your bones, telling you everything.
Bonnie. wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous one. Spoil not his resting place, for a judgment fall at second time, and rise up again, and rise up again.
in Spanish Harlem. It is a special one if ever seen in song. It only comes out when the moon is on the run and all the stars are gleaming. It's glowing in the street, high up to the concrete, but soft and sweet and dreaming. Eyes as black as coal that looks down in my soul and start to fire there and then I lose control. I have to beg you pardon. I'm going to pick the red rose in my garden. Oh yeah. Spanish Harlem, our red rose up in Spanish Harlem. It is a special one that never seen in song. It only comes out when the moon is on the run and all the stars are gleaming. It's glowing in the street, high up to the concrete, but soft and sweet and dreaming, dreaming. Said I'm way down in Spanish Harlem. I'm searching for that red rose. And ooh, said I'm way down. Thank you.
I and I a singer. play it
while BBC is in it.
I'm so glad, no, so glad you show.
Yeah, man, I'm way rolling. God, man, like when reggae music, I'm actually.
Yes, man.
And everywhere.
I'm bad, and I rule. Internationally.
We roll.
Yeah, people love it.
Dirty and roll.
Yeah, man. Fresh.
From Australia to Canada, now everywhere I go,
I want the world to know.
Yadi roll, yadi roll. From the east to the west, and from the north to the south. Yadi roll, yadi roll. And I'm so glad.
Our good friends, and they
Delroy Williams has flown to Zion, where he joins Augustus Pablo and many other reggae greats we've lost. The almost forgotten great songwriter and vocalist from the golden era of reggae passed away on Friday, May 31st, 2024, at age 75. He was a member of the Afrotones, Mad Lads, and the Highlights. Born in 1948 in the Westmoreland Parish, Jamaica, Delroy Williams moved with his mother to Kingston at an early age and stayed there up to the late 80s when he moved to the U.S. The Afrotones, a trio that included George Allison and Ricky Grant, was the first group he recorded with. They recorded a song called One for All and All for One on Sonia Pottinger's High Note label. Ricky Grant re-recorded that song with Delroy on harmony for his LP Poverty People, released in the U.S. in 1981. The group temporarily disbanded and reunited later as the Mad Lads, with Shirley Forbes replacing Ricky Grant. They recorded songs such as 10 to 1, Mother Nature, and You'll Never Know for Cox and Dodd at Studio One. But Rastafari and Delroy Williams soon changed their names to the Highlights. By the early 1970s, Forbes left the group and Williams embarked on a solo career. He tried his luck recording some material for different producers, but none of these efforts resulted in a successful hit record. The opposite was the case, as at this point, the talented songwriter and singer met only with unfortunate circumstances. Reggae singer and producer Dave Robinson took Delroy to record some songs for his Black Star label, which included Let the People, Mr. Hill Say, Marcus Live, and Red, Gold, and Green, In My Garden. The tapes from these recording sessions were given to a producer who proceeded to vanish directly thereafter. It has never been certified what happened to the tapes. However, things changed for the better when he started to hang out with Augustus Pablo's Rockers Collective, observing and making friends. It was Ricky Grant who had introduced him to Pablo, who had expressed some interest in taking Delroy into the studios. Delroy felt very comfortable in the Rockers community and patiently waited a year for this to happen. It was in 1976 that he finally went to record, which led to the single I Stand Black. Since then, he recorded a number of 7 and 12-inch singles with Pablo and harmonized on many releases by other Rockers artists. In 1982, Delroy Williams' strong debut LP, I Stand Black, recorded Studio One and Harry J, was released on the Rockers International and Message labels in Jamaica. The album, produced by Pablo and engineered by Sylvan Morris, Barnabas, and King Tubby, featured 10 tracks, including I Stand Black, Little Less Talking, Mountaintop, Heathen Valley, Crucial, Break My Heart, and I Just Feel Nice, Foxholes, Jah Children, and Love and Learn. It then took Delroy and Pablo 5 years to release the second album, Darkness with Fire. The same year, another Delroy Williams album, Two Timers, saw release in the U.S. through Island in the Sun Records. Island in the Sun Records. In recent years, Delroy recorded under the alias Hootsus Roots. It's Delroy's strong vocal style and true-filling lyrics, which blend so well with Pablo's eerie, melodic, instrumental arrangements that will always be remembered. Our sincerest condolences to his family and friends. Rest in power. We love you, Deli.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, attorney Mara Verheyden-Hilliard joins us to share an on-the-ground perspective of what's happening on college campuses around the nation.
She's one of the leading litigators in defending protesters and winning numerous lawsuits.
We're also joined by Eleanor Stein, who was on campus at Columbia University during the 1968 protests.
Eleanor Stein is a terrific attorney in her own right, a friend of Michael Ratner's when they were both there in 68, and she's got a good memory.
Stay with us.
I'm New York City attorney and author Michael Stephen Smith.
And I'm New York City attorney and activist Heidi Boghossian. During the Occupy Wall Street protests of late 2011 and early 2012, the FBI treated the movement as a domestic terrorist threat. That was even though the Bureau acknowledged that organizers were calling for peaceful protests. Massive resources were deployed to track the movement, and FBI and counterterrorism agents around the country coordinated with local and federal law enforcement to track and gather intelligence, effectively serving as an arm for private business. Now, more than a decade later, college administrators are calling local armed police, some in riot gear, to arrest and in many instances brutalize hundreds of pro-Palestinian protesters in actions and encampments that are sweeping the nation. More than 1,000 protesters have been arrested over the last 2 weeks on campuses in states including Texas, Utah, Virginia, North Carolina, New Mexico, Connecticut, Louisiana, California, and New Jersey. At UCLA last week, after pro-Israel supporters, carrying symbols of radical Jewish groups, not of student age, allegedly threw fireworks into a solidarity encampment, students defending the camp were attacked with stones and sticks. Yet after an hour of violence, police standing nearby and watching failed to intervene. Joining us to discuss these ongoing developments is attorney Mara Verheyden-Hilliard from the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund and its Center for Protest Law and Litigation in Washington, D.C. Mara is one of the country's top litigators defending protesters and winning several reforms in police practices at mass assemblies and demonstrations. Mara Verheyden-Hilliard, welcome back to Law and Disorder.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Mara, as you know, back in the 1960s, city police were called in on many college campuses to intervene during protests. And that led to brutalization and, in some cases, even death of student protesters. Now, as a result of that, nearly every college campus has its own police force. Why, then, are local law enforcement agencies being called on to deal with the rash of campus protests?
Well, universities across the United States are demonstrating their true colors when it comes to academic freedom and free speech, all the things that they talk to their students about in their classes, but then in practice, they're crushing student demonstrations, peaceful protesters demanding divestment from genocide and apartheid. And they are unleashing their municipality police departments to use the force of the state, to use the force of the municipalities to bring in police who are armed, who have guns, who have stun grenades, who have handcuffs, so that they can take students out of these peaceful encampments and take them into custody and crush the protests. And we're seeing a massive wave of that right now.
Mara, in last week's UCLA case, police stood by for an hour as pro-Israeli factions threw stones, sticks, and fireworks into a peaceful encampment. What does this say to you?
Well, the UCLA police stood there while a fascist Zionist mob physically attacked the protesters, beating them with rods, with bats, in an extremely violent attack that went on for an hour or more, and they did nothing. And then they called in the LAPD to arrest the victims of these attacks and to violently take them into custody. And it says a lot about the university. In fact, even after the violent attack on their own students, the university came out basically condemning the students. That was their first reaction, was to condemn the victims of the attack. The level of political hostility towards pro-Palestine, anti-genocide, anti-apartheid students demanding that their universities divest is extraordinary, and the university presidents should be ashamed. It is really heartening, though, that a lot of faculty have stood with the students and themselves have been brutalized and arrested.
Now, Mara, some people have drawn the comparison of the nationwide surge of pro-Palestinian protests to the Occupy movement
And you were very involved in defending occupiers and uncovered evidence of both FBI and Department of Homeland Security monitoring of that movement. Do you think the same kind of federal monitoring of these protests is underway?
I think it is certainly underway. Given the fact that the political nature of the demands of the students, the divestment from apartheid and from genocide, the condemnation of Zionism, this is a deeply political issue that many in power in the United States oppose. And we have, over the years, seen the FBI regularly target those demanding self-determination for the Palestinian people. So we would certainly expect that that is occurring right now.
Attorney Marva Hayden Hilliard, what advice do you give to students who are deciding how active to be in school protests?
I think the same advice that we give everyone, which is to really look at who you want to be, who you want to be able to tell people you were. You want to be that person that's saying, oh, you know, these amazing things that changed our society for the better occurred, but I was never part of them. To follow your own conscience, to follow what you believe in, but to be also very mindful of what you are doing, what your risks are, to be able to make choices that are choices that you believe in and that you are comfortable with, to be as well-informed as possible about what you're doing. But we absolutely support the right of people and encourage people and students to stand up for what they believe in. That is why we have our organization, the Center for Protest Law and Litigation at the Partnership for Civil Justice Fund, because we recognize that all change in history has occurred because of the movement of the people, because of the willingness of people to stand up collectively for what they believe in. And we think that these students are so brave for what they are doing, for what they have been willing to do, because they believe so deeply in the cause of justice, of liberation, and against this vicious genocidal war that has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians.
And we want to ask you in a moment about the Center for Protest Law and Litigation. But Mara, you've alluded to the hypocrisy in universities touting support for free expression, but on the other hand, demonstrating to the world that they're actually limiting that. Can you comment briefly on the rise and contrast for us the increased crackdowns on free speech on campus, but at the same time, the erection of things like Cop City in Georgia, training facilities that I think may be replicated elsewhere in the country to really increasingly militarize our police forces?
There is obviously has been a growing militarization of police agencies. I mean, police agencies have always acted as an occupying force against oppressed communities throughout the United States. And with every advancing year and every advancing technology, they grow in both strength and capacity and use of technologies, including military technologies that are deployed throughout American police forces to use against a civilian population. The training facility that so many people have stood up against in Atlanta is intended to train police in basically urban warfare. And that means that you are training police in how to basically conduct police combat operations against people living in urban environments throughout the United States. It is extremely dangerous that police are basically being trained and given a green light to look at the civilian population almost like enemy combatants in that way. And we and so many others, are deeply opposed to these kind of efforts. It is incredibly dangerous. And you see what the NYPD has been doing in New York. I mean, the NYPD is larger than half of the world's countries' militaries. And here they have been called in against students at university after university after college after college. I mean, basically, they're marching their way through New York City, grabbing students, arresting them at the request of these students' own universities. And they've been brutal in these arrests. They're taking protesters, you know, out of these encampments. And meanwhile, this is their great crime-fighting effort, is students who are standing up for what they believe in, who are engaged in protests and encampments. That's what we're seeing.
This is Attorney Michael Smith. You're listening to Law and Disorder. I'm here with my co-host, Attorney Heidi Bogosian. We're speaking with Attorney Mara Verheyden-Hilliard. Mara, you've been on site at several recent demonstrations. Given your decades of legal work defending protesters and holding police accountable, what are your observations of the new dynamics between police and demonstrators?
I think in many ways the dynamics don't change. Demonstrations take to the street historically in the United States. They are frequently and often historically met with repression by the police. But the fact that, you know, as it says, the people will not be moved, the fact that even with extreme repression, when you look at the long arc, people